This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
When you're getting advice on investing, 99% of people are unsuccessful at it. That's why everybody wants to punish the 1%. There's such a wealth gap. Well, instead of punishing the 1%, get into the 1%.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. This episode is sponsored by Infinite Road Destinations, the smartest short-term rental property management group I know, and the group that manages my properties. This is a company that's very close to my heart, run by two of the smartest, most attentive people I know, Claire Rosenberg and Alex Brashears. Claire and I first met when we worked together at NetApp, where she was a top performer and rose crazy fast in the company. And Alex is just one of the most active, genuine people I know in the real estate space. The two of them together bring a blended background of project management, software design, and extensive experience with automation tools and virtual assistants. Through these experiences, they optimize any property to deliver a hands-off experience to owners while delivering the highest occupancy and highest daily rates possible. You guys know I would not recommend anything to anyone in this group that I do not fully endorse or think that is the absolute best product, and this company is that. And like I said before, this is the exact company and people that manage my Airbnbs. If you don't believe me, here are a few of the other tools and services that come along with the team: listing optimization, guest support and approval, communication and reservations, key exchange and management, dynamic pricing, welcome kit creation, listing advertising and marketing, vendor management, including cleaners, maintenance, handyman, runners, and monthly property reports. To learn more, check out shorttermmadeeasy.com or email info@shorttermmadeeasy.com. And on the form, just mention that you heard it here or mention my name. So give it a try. You have nothing to lose, and they offer a satisfaction guarantee. And I assure you guys, you will not be disappointed. What's up, guys? Today we have a great episode with Dion McNeely. Dion is based in Washington, and he is a former police officer and military officer. And we just have a great episode today. He's got an awesome story of how he was able to achieve financial freedom with three kids and a family, just a lot of overhead, but did it in a way that he explains how it's achievable for anyone to kind of follow or copy, kind of do the same thing. He has six properties, one single family home, and five small multifamilies in Washington state, and just has a great outlook and philosophy on how anyone can do this. Like, it's not about syndicating. It's not about starting a big business. This is truly passive income that he started and scaled kind of year after year. Talks about a strategy of buying one to two deals kind of every year or two and just starting to stack and use creative financing or use a job to get these type of loans and keep buying deals. It's like one of the most repeatable episodes I think we've had on that. This isn't anything that is like a tricky formula or something that is extremely, I guess, difficult to comprehend. Like, it's a simple strategy and just executed well, and it keeps getting better and better. We talk about some of his early deals, some of his later deals, and how he's now doing a deal that has a 17% return after his first deals were all around 10% returns, cash on cash. And now this one is just doing awesome. So we go into all that. The main learning I had from this show, we talk about a lot of topics, but one of them is liquidating retirement accounts and using that money to buy real estate. And during COVID, actually, of course, check with financial advisors and kind of do your own research on this. But during COVID, people had the option to liquidate their retirement accounts with no penalty. Typically, it's somewhere in the range of a 10% penalty if you liquidate early. But during COVID, you could do it with no penalty. So that was the main learning I had. He liquidated all his accounts use some for real estate, put some into savings, some into different investing strategies. But depending on your wants, needs, desires, and goals, you can use the money for whatever you want and kind of just build your own plan. So pretty cool stuff. Today's tangible tip is you can take loans against your retirement accounts if you need money to do investments or whatever. It's a great option to consider. This is different than a self-directed IRA. This is actually taking the money out, using it for whatever you want and paying back interest to yourself. You can obviously do fun stuff with it, or I'd probably recommend buying real estate or investments that make you money. And then you're paying back interest to yourself. You're making a return in your new investment and you have play money that you can use to do stuff with. So pretty cool. So yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Today's tangible tip. Great episode today with Dion. Really fun. Enjoy, guys. All right, Dion, what is going on, man? Welcome to the podcast. Excited to have you here. How are you?
Man, I appreciate the invite. I'm actually excited to be here.
Awesome, man. Well, we're going to just kind of jump right in. You've got a great story, military background, turned real estate investor, and I've done a lot of community-driven activity since, a lot of content creation. So we'd love to just jump in and kind of hear from the beginning, from a high level, how you got started in all this. And then, you know, we'll work up to it, but also from a high level, what you do in real estate today. So if you wouldn't mind, if we could start there, that'd be awesome.
Sure. I like to start with the first reason would be, why should somebody care what I have to say? And that is because I reached financial freedom, completely made work optional in less than 10 years, starting as a single parent with three kids and about $89,000 in bad debt that I didn't know existed until the divorce. Mm. So that's the kind of the end product. So yes, there's a reason why I'm trying to share my information. but the reason I did it was I was tired of sources of income being taken away due to things outside of my control. After Desert Storm, the Marine Corps downsized. In 2008, I was a police officer, and when the recession hit, police departments shrink when there's no revenue coming in, and I got laid off. I tried to run a company, and I had to close it down because of the divorce, and I got a job after law enforcement and thought I landed on my feet, and it was a great job paying twice what I was making as a police officer, but it was a trucking company because I have a CDL. And that trucking company decided to go on strike about 9 months later. So that job went away. And I looked around and I thought that there has to be a way to make money and not have it be reliant on things that can be taken away that I have no control of. And I have a few friends who reached financial freedom using real estate. My brother retired with 10 paid off rental properties, but I was working full time, had a bunch of bad debt, and I was raising three kids. And his method was to buy mobile homes on acreage in the middle of nowhere that were falling apart. Like literally they could have been bulldozed down, but he's like a craftsman and has all of these technical physical skills. And he would rebuild the mobile homes into really nice rentals and then rent them out. I don't have the time or the skill set to do that. So I was living in a house that I owned and I thought I'll just test out the waters. I didn't know if I could handle being a landlord, working full time and raising kids. So I moved into an apartment and rented the house out. And I made every mistake that I could think of. It was like I was trying to mess up. I rented to a friend because I didn't think I could trust a stranger. I didn't use a lease. I didn't try to make a profit because I didn't see myself as a professional yet. So I just set the rent value at the mortgage value, which meant I wasn't setting aside for CapEx, vacancies, or thinking of taxes even. And the person I rented the house out to was a single parent, and I understood his struggles. So when the rent was late, I didn't care. And then late became later, which then became never. And when I finally went to the house to have a face-to-face conversation, I found out he had moved out, rented the house to someone else, and was collecting rent and keeping it. And wow. So I thought, there's no way I can handle real estate, right? The problem with most investors is we make all of our mistakes in the beginning. So we think that's how it's always going to be. So I tried to quit. I tried to give the house away. And luckily for me, it was 2010 or so, and the housing market had crashed and I owed more on the property than it was worth. So I couldn't even give the property away.
Wow.
So I realized I wasn't educating myself. You know, like the people listening right now are taking the time to figure out how investing works. And especially if they're a newer investor, instead of going out and making all of the mistakes and inventing the wheel, they can learn from the mistakes that we've made. And I found Bigger Pockets, which is an online community of investors, and they weren't really doing videos yet in the dinosaur days of 2010 and 11. but they had stuff online that you could read, you know, blogs. I found out about, you know, having strong leases, what the actual laws were, how CapEx and vacancy works, how you need to save for those because those are going to be expenses you have in the future. Got a good tenant in my house. And then somewhere I found out about the term house hacking, where, you know, you reduce or eliminate your housing costs because it's the biggest expense most of us have.
Mm-hmm.
And single family houses in my area just didn't work. They cost too much to cash flow. So if you buy one, you wouldn't be able to profit by having a tenant in there. The only reason my single family house that I have worked is because I bought it in 2000, you know, a decade before then.
Mm-hmm.
But lending works the same for small multifamily. So duplexes, triplex, fourplex, you know, four units or less, you can get 30-year fixed rate, low interest rate loans. If you're living on the property, you can even do low down payments, qualify for VA loan or an FHA loan with 3.5% down or conventional with 3% down. Some lenders will require more for a duplex or a fourplex, but you don't have to put 25% down. So I moved into a duplex and took my housing costs from the apartment I was renting from $1,500 a month down to $300 a month, which added a bunch to my savings rate and helped me save and for the next property, which took a little more than 2 years to buy. And that's the thing that a lot of new investors, so I help people reach financial independence. And it seems like a lot of times they make the same mistake. I want financial independence now. Like they think it's, you know, what can I buy now that will make me free? And so they think it's a sprint, and the sprint is saturated. So many people trying to do the Burr method or wholesale or flip as a beginning investor when there's so many things to learn. How does lending work? How do you find tenants? Where do you get your lease? How do you do repairs? How do taxes work? All of these things that you're trying to figure out while you add all these extra elements of with a flip, you have possibly hard money, rehab costs, estimating your after repair value. With a Burr method, you have to make sure you're able to refinance or it can all blow up in your face. And people think because they sound catchy that those are the ways to get into investing. And what I found is most effective is simple and boring. The sprint is saturated. The marathon is not.
Mm.
My favorite podcast to listen to outside of Bigger Pockets is One Rental at a Time by a content creator, Michael Zuber. He's got a book, One Rental at a Time. And financial freedom actually happens one rental at a time. If you buy one once a year, once every other year, which was my strategy, I bought one every other year. And in 8 years was completely financially free. At 10 years now, the cash flow is about three times what it takes me to live. But if I had tried any of those faster, you know, the Burr method or flipping in the beginning, one or two mistakes might have stopped me from ever being an investor and even in my entire life reaching financial freedom. Because what I find is the people who are successful, who do a Burr and it works out, or flip a bunch of properties and it works out and they get their systems down, get a lot of attention. They get invited on podcasts, they get books, they make their own content channels. The people who fail, they don't make a content channel saying, hey, look, I tried a Burr and it didn't work. They don't get invited on shows. So how many thousands didn't work for the ones that we hear that did? But when people have a slow system of buying one rental, saving the down payment, house hacking if possible, I've only house hacked twice. So it's not like you have to move every year. The second house hack, I moved into a fourplex. So, you know, again, low money down, 30-year fixed rate. I'm living for free. I'm actually being paid $1,700 a month by the property I'm living in to live there on top of the cash flow from the other properties. And in the beginning, saving the money took a long time. You know, it was over 2 years till the next property. Then the next one was just under 2 years. Then the next one was about a year. And then I paid off a mortgage in 2 years. There's this thing that kicks in called the income snowball. You know, a lot of people listen to Dave Ramsey and they know of the debt snowball, where you pick your smallest debt and focus on paying it off. And even though it's not mathematically the smartest, because paying off the highest interest rate makes the most sense mathematically, the dopamine hit that you get from paying off each small debt keeps you focused on paying those debts off. So the debt snowball is really popular. And I actually used that without knowing what it was, but hardly anybody talks about the income snowball. Every time you buy a cash flowing asset that produces money that doesn't take your actual selling your life 1 hour at a time to make money, the time it takes to save a down payment or reserves or closing cost, it speeds up and just gets faster and faster. It gets to the point where now, 11 years later, I have to find things to do with money. Like if I don't find a place to buy, it bothers me because we all know money sitting in a bank is losing value due to inflation every year. So that's the struggle now, is finding the next investment.
Mm. Okay. So much good stuff there. I guess just going back to like the progression of your deals, you said you were doing one every other year. How were they all house hacks? And if they were, could you maybe talk about how you were funding them and finding them?
Sure. So I house hacked the first duplex. And so I had a savings rate. The house was cash flowing. It's actually cash flowing very well now because of, there's a Bigger Pockets episode with Joe Asamoah on Section 8 housing. And I had always associated Section 8 housing with low income. And that's not what it is. Section 8 housing is fixed income. And the program pays whatever the area average market rent is. So I have a house now that's cash flowing two or three times what I was cash flowing just because I watched that episode. So my savings rate, house hacking and saving the $1,200 a month from that, house cash flowing. In 2 years, I was able to save up a 20% down payment for the next duplex. So I didn't have to move into it. One aspect of my investing that I usually forget to mention is I'm super lazy and I want to invest so that I don't have to work. So that's strong motivation to invest, is to make work optional, but I don't want to move every year, because the perfect scenario for house hacking is using owner occupied loans to get a property with very little money down that cash flows, live there for 1 year and move to the next one. And every year buy a new place, because when you buy a house hack, you're committing to living in that property for at least 12 months. But I don't want to move all the time. In 10 years, I've moved twice for the house hacks, into the duplex and then into the fourplex 8 years later. Mm. Once you get a savings rate, the struggle is avoiding life creep. You know, when you get cash flow and you think, wow, I have an extra $600 every single month that I don't have to work for after taxes that just shows up in my bank account, I could totally go and buy a nice, big, huge pickup truck. That's the payment, literally made without me having to do anything. Or for a few years, you just save it, add it to this down payment for the next place. I did do some things that were a little creative. Your retirement account, lenders will recognize 50% of a retirement account as a reserve. So sometimes when buying a property, I wouldn't actually have cash reserves. I would have my retirement account sitting there as a reserve. Since then, I've changed my opinion on that and I've completely emptied out my reserve, my retirement accounts. I hate the idea of money locked away, not paying me, because with the tax benefits of a, a 401k or a Roth or anything like that, you're delaying taxes and hoping that the government is not going to increase taxes in the future, or that you're hoping when you retire, you're making less money, which is not my hope. If I stopped working now, I'm making twice what I was making as a police officer if I never work another day in my life. So that isn't the case. If I had took my left two retirement funds and kept them in there. Luckily, because of the pandemic last year, I was able to avoid the 10% penalty. So I don't know if I would have emptied those accounts if I didn't have to do, you know, if I wasn't able to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk about that for a sec, because it's a hot button topic for a lot of people in Sure. The financial world, financial advisor world, or even like creative funding world. So can you just maybe go like a layer or two deeper on how you thought about saving for retirement versus emptying those accounts versus, I don't know if you ever considered like taking loans against them, but you know, I know a lot of people listen to this show. One of our biggest like mantras on the show is to not take advice from people that aren't kind of doing what you want to be doing or kind of doing what you're doing. Like if someone in corporate has never invested in a rental, of course they're going to tell you that investing in a 401k and an IRA is the only option. But they've never thought about kind of like retirement planning or financial planning from this angle. So it's a question that comes up a lot. And like we've had some good debates on it in the group of, Should I keep money in those accounts? Should I not? Should I put money in and take loans out against it? So I would just love to hear kind of your thinking on that and kind of like what prompted you to change your thinking.
Sure. Two things, and remind me if I get off topic.
Okay.
First, your podcast is awesome because one of the things I think that makes me a great instructor when it comes to investing, real estate, or anything is that I run a CDL school. Every 4 weeks, we have a new group of students that come in at ground zero. So it's like Groundhog's Day. And the hardest thing about instructing is remembering what it's like to not know something. And the way you just clarified, so you back up and go over that, that's what your viewers need. So keep doing that. That's great. The second thing, the way I look at retirement accounts is kind of based on, or getting your information from any source about retirement accounts, is people in the military. I teach a lot of classes to people transitioning out of the military, how to find a job, how to do an interview, how to reach financial freedom. Because in the military, you can go to your chain of command and you can ask, you know, you have your sergeant, your lieutenant, your captain, everybody above you in the chain of command, and say, I'm moving to a new duty station. What's that going to be like? They can tell you. I'm going to a combat zone for the first time. What's that going to be like? And they can tell you. I'm going to be stationed in another country for 2 years. What's that going to be like? They can tell you. They can't go to their command and say, I'm getting out of the military next year. What's that going to be like? Because their command is still in, but their command has all kinds of advice on what to do when you get out. And the worst one is somebody in the military who was in for 10 years is out for five, and then goes back in and tries to give advice on to other service members on what to do when you get out. Because if you went back in, you didn't get out successfully. When you're getting advice on investing, 99% of people are unsuccessful at it. That's why everybody wants to punish the 1%. There's such a wealth gap. Well, instead of punishing the 1%, get into the 1%. When you buy a car that has a social status, and you spend money and it depreciates as soon as you drive off the property and you take a tax hit, but the money that you spend on that car could have been the same amount of money that you spent on a duplex, and you don't have a shiny car to drive around in, but you now have an asset that's appreciating, that's cash flowing, and then that cash flow can pay for the car. Simple mindset shift of getting the same car, but in a different order. One person works for the money to try to buy it and puts themselves in debt. Another person works for money to buy an asset to put themselves in good debt so that asset pays for itself and pays for the car. So one of the things that's great about successful YouTube channels like One Rental at a Time, or I believe like mine, is which is just Dion Talk Financial Freedom, is how simple it can be. There is no special secret sauce. You don't have to overthink things. Don't use the trick method like the Burr or flipping or anything. Just buy a rental, save the money, buy a rental. All my rentals are right off the MLS. So if a person has a mindset to be an investor, I strongly suggest investing in an asset that appreciates, has multiple ways of paying you, like principal pay down every month. The tenants are paying down the mortgages. I'm getting cash flow. There's tax benefits. I can use a 1031 exchange. I can, you know, if I buy another property, I can delay the taxes with the stepped up tax system. My kids aren't even going to pay taxes on the capital gains of the properties that they inherit. But if you don't have an investor's mindset and you don't understand that it's going to take time to learn everything that I just said in the last 35 seconds, then a retirement account is a great idea. It's automated. It's coming out of your check without you thinking about it. You're getting a match from your employer. And I still do the match to get, you know, I contribute the exact amount to get the most that the employer will match.
Right. It's like free money.
And I hate it. And I hate it. It's free money, but it's locking away free money. And I'm a lot older than you. I will hit 59 and a half sooner than you. So to me, it's locking it away for less time. But so think about money locked away in a retirement account, hoping that taxes are less in the future. You can borrow against it. I suggest doing that if you do the research and you have an asset that you have, not your first one. Don't borrow against your 401k and buy the first property, because that might be your bad deal. That might be the one you lose money on. Now you're paying interest on the loan to your retirement account, and you're losing money on the asset. But once you've bought two or three and you have a system down with a confidence comes from competence. Once you're competent at something, then you can have the confidence to borrow against your retirement account. I didn't empty my retirement account for years because I didn't know how to spend the money to make more money. But last year when the pandemic hit and I thought I can take the money out with no penalty, and I absolutely know how to put that money to work or to use it as a reserve, or I know it's going to be in a better position. Because think about a retirement account: tax benefits and an employer match versus real estate. Cash flow now, at least 10% or better cash on cash return on every property that I've purchased. The last one is a 17% return. So it's not like it's getting worse. Mm-hmm. The systems are getting better. Appreciation. Every year, property values are going up. They can go down, but over the length of long time, just like the stock market, they have appreciated. Principal pay down. Every month, tenants are paying money down on the mortgages, which is like a savings account that I don't have to actively put money in, that grows every month.
Mm-hmm.
And then tax benefits, better tax benefits than the retirement account has. So to me, I am financially free. I am not anyone's financial advisor. I would never want another penny locked in a retirement account again in my life because of the way I look at retirement. Most of us have a perception that retirement means I'm now 65 and don't have to work. It's just in the last few years that the FIRE community, you know, financial independence retire early, became a thing where we can retire early. Well, what does that mean? It means that all of your living expenses and the lifestyle you want to live is paid for without you having to work. So if you can do that at 24 or 65, how much money you have in a retirement account is absolutely irrelevant. As soon as work is optional, based on money coming in that you don't have to work for, what's the point of a retirement account?
I want to get your opinion on something that was a good kind of spark conversation last week around life insurance. For me this year, I'm single. I don't have any kids, and I hit financial freedom this year, and like early stages of it. And I really started to question everything. You know, I came from a corporate background where everyone's just giving the same bad advice, or advice that I guess might make sense to that world. But I put this out there when I just started doing like high level research on life insurance. That I didn't really see the point of it for someone who was looking to achieve financial freedom or to start a business that would cash flow sort of consistently. Nothing is guaranteed. Everything could go away at some point, but I'd say from like a pretty stable standpoint. So I put it out there, and tons of intense reactions and responses. And a lot of people still in the corporate world were responding. I didn't really like waft in either direction because it's different for everyone's situation. But, you know, like for me, I kind of came to my own personal conclusion, and it could change, but I paused paying into a life insurance policy that was tied to the job that I had that I left. And I'm still, I guess, kind of walking down that path, but it could be advice to me or just anyone listening to this, or just your kind of view. It doesn't have to be advice. It could just be your stance on it for yourself. What's your view on life insurance policies?
Okay. So again, if I get too far off topic, reel me back in.
Let's do it.
On my YouTube channel, I try to do 10-minute videos to answer a simple question. You know, how do you screen your tenants? Why I don't use the Burr method, just 10 minutes, super, super simple. Mm-hmm. But there are some topics that I can't have an opinion on because I'm not left wing. I'm not right wing. I'm not, I invest in single family houses or small multifamily, which doesn't mean I don't think multifamily doesn't work, right? I invest in long-term rentals. That doesn't mean I don't think short-term rentals don't work. So on my channel, I have some episodes where there are two of me. One represents single family house and one represents multifamily house. They both present their pros and then they both present the other's cons. So when you bring up a topic like life insurance, you're going to have some people listening who love it, who earn their money from it, or their company has a great plan, or they've figured out how to invest in it and they're going to get a return in the future, and they understand those things. And so they'll hate you if you say don't have life insurance. And then you have other people that are thinking, I don't want to be worth more dead than I am alive. My kids would have killed me for a slice of pizza, so I didn't want them thinking they can get a bunch of money. And I have what's called key man insurance with my trucking company. If I die, the owners get millions of dollars. So that always plays in the back of my mind, like I'm worth more dead than alive. But if you're young and you have young kids, life insurance is key, especially if you're the main source of income, or even if you're equally earning the incomes, if one of you passes away, the other one's going to be traumatized for several years, and keeping income is going to be difficult. So it completely makes sense. But once your kids are grown and they're not reliant on your source of income, and if you've developed passive sources of income, like a real estate rental portfolio or a stock market portfolio that produces money, either dividend or it's big enough for the 4% rule to be a draw that you can live on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the point of mortality insurance. And I have never taken the time to learn about even what the term whole life insurance means, where you pay for a number of years, then there's this gap of 20 years, and then all of a sudden you could start drawing money out of it. So I know that's a thing, but people need to invest in what excites them. If somebody likes rentals like I do, it makes sense to invest in them, because I enjoy going and seeing a rental and working on it, or hiring somebody to make it better and put a roof on and protect an asset. Mm-hmm. Some other people might look at stocks and they love looking at the trends every day and figuring out, you know, how do they diversify? What kind of control do they have? And to me, if somebody gave me any kind of stocks, I would sell it, take the money and put it in a rental. Like, it means that little to me, to where I have no money invested in stocks. For me, it's easier to diversify in real estate. It's easier to have control in real estate. But for some people, insurance might be the way to go. They might be excited about understanding the timeline of how insurance impacts their life. So I'll cop out and say, invest in what excites you. That my opinion is, I don't have any life insurance other than what the company has, and me and my family aren't going to get that money when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to inherit several million dollars in real estate, even though I haven't spent anywhere near that. I've spent in 10 years about a little over $500,000. And my net worth due to appreciation, principal pay down, and reinvesting cash flow is in several millions now. So hope that answered the question on
that. It's a personal question, a personal answer, but I do think it's regardless worth understanding for your situation and your wants. And also, like, something that I'm really fixed on these days is like ambition level. A lot of people will say stuff, but then they don't have the ambition level or ability to sacrifice for it. You know, like, I house hacked for 5 years out of college, and I talked to so many people on the phone who I bring that up to, and they're like, how should I get started? And I say, they're like, I don't want to do that. So I say, okay, so you don't really want it, you know, maybe at the level that you think you do. And that's totally fine, because we love, you know, Gary Vee is like kind of one of our favorite people that we kind of post a lot about in the group. It's about happiness. So like, whatever makes you happy, but like, if your ambition level is going to be tied to happiness that you're kind of fluffing up, that's not real, then, you know, then it's just not for you. So like, understanding your situation is the most important thing here. So I'm really glad we kind of went down that path. A couple of things you said, I just want to go back a little bit, kind of more for the beginners. And you said you made tons of beginner mistakes, and you mentioned a couple of them, but I would love to hear what some of your biggest mistakes turned learnings were. And you mentioned a couple, those could have been them, but if you had any others that just come to mind when you hear that question, you know, there are mistakes made. I do believe that happens, but as everyone kind of talks about, if they're learned from and then, you know, adapted to, it's all good. So we'd love to hear if you had any kind of key mistakes that turned into important learnings.
So the biggest mistake in the beginning was not looking at it as a profession. When you're investing, we want financial freedom. Like you said, some people don't want to house hack, and they don't realize that there's gradations of house hacking. You know, you can have roommates, you can live in another unit in a duplex, you can have two houses on one property, a house with an ADU, so you're literally not sharing any walls, but it's still a way of reducing your income by renting out, or your housing expenses by renting out the other house. To become a Marine, you have to go to boot camp, you have to go to infantry school, you have to go to your military occupational specialty training. To work in law enforcement, you have a 6-month academy after at least a year to get on the police department in the first place. You said you worked in a corporate world. I'm pretty sure you didn't just show up and all of a sudden you were doing corporate things. Like, there was some training and education you had to do to get to the point where you can have the job. But we think, I'm just going to invest and then figure it out. Not educating yourself first is the biggest mistake. So people listening now, this is the right thing to do. And there's some advice I give when people say, when the question comes up, how do I find a mentor? And finding a mentor is almost the last step in the process. The first thing is you have to educate yourself by finding out what do you want to invest in? Because if somebody wanted to ask me to be a mentor, I could say, I can totally help you to invest in small multifamily, single family houses, house hacking, buy and hold investing. But if you want to know how to do a flip, can't tell you anything. Don't know how to do a BRRRR, can't tell you anything. And those are almost the same investing in the same asset class. So it's so nuanced that until you know what you want to do at the end, which is going to take research. So I suggest podcasts like yours, One Rental at a Time, mine, Bigger Pockets, Graham Stephan, Meet Kevin, Minority Mindset, you know, the bigger players, listening to hundreds of hours. You know, I mean, you could still watch Netflix, but when you're working out, maybe listen to a podcast. When you're driving, listen to a podcast. Get that education in your head so that you can narrow down what you want to invest in, so that you don't know what mistakes to avoid in the beginning unless you've narrowed down what you want to do. If you want to make passive income, investing in stocks doesn't make any sense unless you understand you need to grow the portfolio so large that you can withdraw 4% and still not damage the actual principal. Or you need to understand dividend investing. If you want to invest in real estate, you have to understand that there are several ways to invest in real estate that have no passive income. There are people who have been investing in Los Angeles or New York for the last 20 years, banking on appreciation. They're not making any, they're possibly losing money every month, but stand the chance to make millions when they sell. So educate yourself before you make the moves, you know, find out what are the first steps to investing, because almost for any type of investing, the first three steps are the same. Spend less than you make, save and invest the difference, and work on your credit score. No matter what you invest in, at some point, those three things are going to be a factor. So while you're doing those three things, you can educate yourself. So it's not like, let me put all of what I'm going to do on hold while I educate myself. You can be working on how to learn how to save more, how to, you know, where to save that before you invest it, and then working on your credit score. A lot of people undervalue how important that's going to be at a time later, thinking, I'm just going to buy all cash. Well, what if you want to take out a home equity line out of on some properties that you have a ton of equity in so that you can use the money? Mm. Even, and that is something that people don't think of when they think, I'm just going to buy all cash. They don't realize they're creating this huge equity position that becomes a tool that they might want to use later. Especially for younger people, working on that credit score is huge. And there's some simple strategies that you can use, several videos on YouTube to simple things that you that don't even really change what you're spending, but you know, have a huge impact on that credit score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. Before we wind down and get you out of here, you said there was one deal you have now that you're making a 17% return on. Could you tell us a little about that? The nuts and bolts, how you found it, funded it, what the business plan was, all that?
Sure. Couple of factors that really help new investors. One of the big mistakes I was making in the beginning was I was trying to buy the cheapest property I could find. What's the best deal? What's the best price? You know, I want to pay the least amount. And if I'm trying for a 10% return or better, if I spend $10,000, that means I'm making $1,000 a year. If I spend $100,000, that means I'm making $10,000 a year. And it scales. Sometimes if somebody wants to buy a $150,000 property, they're going to get a 10% return. So they're looking for the best $150,000 property. But if they were to look for the $300,000 properties in their market, the return could be better than 10% and of a bigger amount. And last year, the pandemic hit. Interest rates came down, prices started going up, and I wasn't really paying attention. I thought, wow, these prices have gone up too much for me to buy anything. I was paying $150,000 or less per unit, pretty much every property I've ever purchased. You know, I bought one for $300, $290, $298. Then I bought a fourplex for $590. And prices went up to where, you know, each unit was $160,000, $170,000. And they started being outside of my price range. And I made the mistake of I stopped looking for a few months. And then on One Rental at a Time, Michael Zuber talked about how when interest rates go down, prices go up, but you might be paying less every month. I wasn't actually running the math. So I looked at the math And I realized that I was passing on some deals that were better than the ones I had. So in November, I bought a triplex, which is it's a house and a duplex on one property. I paid $175,000 a unit. So it was $525,000, which was more than I would have spent the year before. $450,000 would have been my max for a triplex because of my mindset. And at $525,000 down, with the income snowball, you know, I'd been saving the down for a while. So I did 20% down. The return is 17% based on the current rents and my payment and setting aside for CapEx and vacancy. And it floored me because I was hoping for a 10% return on cheaper properties. So I would have been making less. Because I opened my mind to how are interest rates affecting this, I was able to buy something that costs more, which hurts my scarcity mindset. Because something I didn't mention is the way I grew up, we were never homeless. We always had a house. We just didn't own it or pay rent. My family, we lived in Los Angeles and we used to just move into empty houses, fix the doors and windows and live there until the owner showed up. And then we would just move to the next one. So kind of like squatters, except we didn't stay and make the owner go through an eviction. And the places were nicer when we left than when we moved in. So as an investor, I'm house hacking, getting paid to live where I am at. So in my mind, I think all of my tenants are richer than I am because somehow every month they can afford to pay rent. And I still don't even do that. So for my brain to understand, I want to spend more money. That was a big hurdle for me to get past. And I'm really glad I did it because a 17% return on that property added over $1,500 a month to my cash flow because I was willing to spend the money. So that was a mental shift for me that I think was a mistake as a newer investor, as I was looking for the cheapest deal instead of the best deal.
Mm. Dion, this has been just a great kind of thorough episode. I have your YouTube channel pulled up and I'll be checking out some of those videos today and we'll be sharing it out. It's sort of a linked question, but what are you focused on right now? What's the next couple months or year look like for you? And then could you talk about your content as well?
Sure. So I think I'm one of those weird people that hopes nothing changes. Everyone thinks in 5 years I'll be doing this and it'll be better, or I'll be making this and it'll be better. But I reached financial freedom. So I was able to found a nonprofit that people can check out at hiddenjobs.org. I help people find jobs in transportation. The truck driving school, we train people to become drivers, but all of these trucking companies have HR, IT, operations, logistics, forklift, mechanic, web design, legal team, like every position you can imagine exists in transportation, but nobody's applying for those jobs because we all picture truck drivers when we think of a company like Coke or a company like Pepsi, which employs 150,000 more people than the state of Washington does. So some of these companies are huge. I've been able to do that and not charge a penny. It's a 501c3. I don't have to charge the client that I'm helping find a job. I don't charge the employers. I do it because it helps our CDL school help our drivers find local jobs so they don't have to drive over the road. I like working at the CDL school because I get to literally play in a semi like it's a go-kart and help somebody learn a new skill and get a job. But my focus is on helping people reach financial freedom. So it's funny that my two jobs are helping people find work. My focus is helping people make work optional. Mm. So my YouTube channel, which is Dion Talk Financial Freedom, I try to make videos that answer questions. I try to keep them to 10 minutes or less so that I just answer the question without a bunch of covering 10 topics. So you have to search through a video to find the one you're looking for. And that started because in the Bigger Pockets Facebook groups, like the official Bigger Pockets group and the Real Estate Rookie group, I saw the same questions come up over and over and over. So I started answering them. And then I started taking phone calls to help people answer those questions in more detail. But that really became a time sink. So now when somebody has a question like, what is house hacking? I actually have a video to send them to. So they don't realize it's just roommates. There's like, you know, 10 different ways to house hack. And that's been a nice time saver. And I'm actually having a lot of fun. I mean, I don't have the editing skills. I need to hire like a 10-year-old to come in and make them look better. But having a video where I get to argue with myself about topics where I don't have to show what my opinion is so people can figure out which one they chose, it's hard because I laugh too much. I have to, you know, 90% on the cutting room floor of my videos is me just laughing at myself. You know, in one video, I'm dressed as a pirate and a gangster arguing about whether you should use all cash or use leverage. And one pulls out a machine gun. And then, yeah, so I just have too much fun doing that.
All right, I'm excited to check that out. Dion, thank you so much for coming on, man. Really, really fun episode. And just lots of tactical nuggets, nothing fluffy here. So for anyone that's looking to learn more, we'll have all that link below. But Dion, I just want to say thank you for coming on, man. Look forward to staying in touch and tracking your journey as you keep things the same, but gradual improvement, you know? So that's cool, man. So thank you again for coming on.
All right, Jonathan, I really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, the best way is through Messenger on Facebook. It's Dion McNeely. And I try to answer questions. I'm happy to help if I can.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Dion.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.